The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 18, text number 71. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari. Recorded on December 26th, 2012, in Ashfield, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Shraddhavan anusuyascha.
Shraddhavan anusuyascha.
Shrinuyad apiyo nara.
Shrinuyad apiyo nara.
Sopi mukta shubhal lokan.
Sopi mukta shubhal lokan.
Prapnuyat punyakarmanam.
Prapnuyat punyakarmanam.
1871. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. Purport. In the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for the devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee holds open class, and in that class not all of the students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? It is explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many men who are not envious of Krishna. They have faith in Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such persons hear from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free from all sinful reactions, and after that attain to the planetary system where all righteous persons are situated. Therefore, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, even a person who does not try to become a pure devotee attains the result of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee of the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and to become a devotee of the Lord. Generally, those who are free from sinful reactions, those who are righteous, very easily take to Krishna consciousness. The word punya karmanam is very significant here. This refers to the performance of great sacrifices like the Ashvamedha Yajna mentioned in the Vedic literature. Those who are righteous in performing devotional service but who are not pure can attain the planetary system of the pole star or Dhruvaloka, where Dhruva Maharaj, controller of the material nature, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. He is a great devotee of the Lord, and he has a special place which is called the pole star. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Parakamalam. Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschanjade Satarine. So, here we are rotting in this material world. But by the grace of this greatest Vaishnava, his divine grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, we have gotten the ticket out of this place, out of this nasty place. We've gotten the ticket back to home, back to Godhead. We simply have to hear. That is the key. One who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions. He either attains the planets where the pious dwell, or he can go even further and become a pure devotee and go back to Godhead. So, what does that tell us, ladies and gentlemen and kids? So, what does that tell us? The point is, if we can hear very nicely, that's the key. That's how education comes, by hearing. Just like you children, I'd like you to listen to me instead of playing with each other. Actually, if they can some sit in the front here, that'd be very good. I'd like you children to listen to me. You come, instead of playing with each other, you come and listen to me. I'd like you, they can sit in the front, it'd be very good. I don't know if they will. They might cry if we ask them to. We don't want them to cry. If you can come here, that would be very nice. Would you like this? Can you sit here? No, they won't do. They want to play with each other instead of listening. But this actually, listening is a very important thing. Just like in the school, how will they educate him? When they go to school, they'll be forced to hear from the teacher so many hours during the day. That's how they become educated. So actually, we should teach them how to hear from the devotees. Because if the first people they learn to hear from are the non-devotees, then that will influence their life in that way. If the children can be taught to sit very nicely and hear the preachers, you see, let them learn that art. Because otherwise, the first place they'll be able to sit and hear is in the Karmi school. That's very important. Actually, the children, they can absorb better than we can. If you can put a child in an atmosphere where three different languages are spoken, and without cracking one textbook, he can learn all three languages. You see, if you put an adult there, no. But the child has much more powerful learning ability than the adults. So we should take advantage of their childhood years and let them hear as much as possible from the preachers of Krishna consciousness. Teach them to sit and hear and absorb. It's amazing. Even a three-year-old boy, without even trying to memorize verses, just by hearing the classes, he can recite shlokas and explain their meaning. We've seen them. One little boy, we never taught him to memorize verses, but just he sat in the classes and heard very nicely. He could recite verses and explain their meaning. He would make a point, and then he would back it up with a shastic quote to support his point. A three-year-old child. No memorization class to make a show for Janmashtami, nothing like that. But just hearing the classes, the child learned the verses automatically, effortlessly. We work so hard, just like right now I'm trying to memorize all the Brahma Samhita, English and Sanskrit, all the Govinda prayers. It's really a big endeavor. It's rewarding, but it's a lot of work, and I'm just working my way one verse at a time through the list of all the Govinda prayers. But for a child, it's effortless. If they can simply hear, then they can absorb. Their brains have an amazing ability to absorb things. So, of course, the same thing applies to us adults. Hearing is a very important thing. Prabhupada noted that about himself, actually. He told us that how his Guru Maharaj had organized the Brajmandal Parikrama, you see, different places traveling around Brajmandal. In the evening there would be a lecture, or you could go for darshan. So, Guru Maharaj speaks in very erudite language, English language, Bhakti Sanata Sarasvati. And the materialistic Deminar cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. In this way, very big language, very high level English is in. So what these Bengali villagers can understand. So in the evening lecture time, they would go for darshan instead of hearing the lecture. Only a few sannyasis would go for the lecture, and one pharmaceutical businessman from Allahabad named Abhay Charande. He would sit there and he would hear, he said, I would understand or I would not understand, but still I would go on listening. He said, in this way, Guru Maharaj marked me. You see, actually the devotees, just like in ISKCON, the authorities recommend, oh, we like to recommend so-and-so for Diksha. So the same thing in the Gaudiya. They said, Guru Maharaj, we want to recommend this Abhay Charande from Allahabad for Diksha. He said, oh yes, the others go away, but he hears. Therefore, I'll accept him as my disciple. So Prabhupada said, because I heard nicely, now I can speak nicely. So if you have a desire to be able to do wonderful service for this, for Lord Chaitanya's mission, to be able to attract people, to give up their entanglement in the cycle of birth and death and actually become liberated souls, free from birth, death, old age and disease, then you should hear very, very nicely. Absorb it deep, deep, not that one ear, not the other, you see. But take it in both ears and deep into your heart. This is actually called premanjana, the ointment of love of God. Like in the Brahma Samhita it is stated, premanjana charita bhakti valochanena tantak sadaiva hridayeshu valokayanti yang sham shundar machint yaganasvarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham vajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda who is Shamasundar, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion, tinged with the salve of love. So what is that salve of love, premanjana? How do you get it? Is it come in a little tube? You get it out of the drugstore. What, I don't know, in America we call it the drugstore. What do you call your...
Pharmacy.
Pharmacy? Yeah, like pharmacy or drugstore, we use those terms in the US. So where is that pharmacy where you can get this tube of premanjana?
We have a
pharmacy. Prabhupada's pharmacy. Prabhupada was formerly a pharmacist, and he's still a pharmacist. But he gave up all those other medicines for the temporary body, and now Prabhupada is dispensing only one medicine, that's premanjana, you see. One medicine. And this eye ointment, normally you put eye ointment in your eyes, you see. That's the normal way to put it. You put it here, you know, you take it, you put it in your eye and blink a little bit, you know, and get the ointment in your eye. But this ointment, this eye ointment goes through the ears. It's a very unusual ointment. You apply this eye ointment through your ears. Do you understand your ear? Can you show us your ears? Yes. These are your ears. Can you imagine putting eye ointment through your ears? Isn't that a pretty amazing thing? To put eye ointment through your ears. But that's how it is done. If you hear about Krishna from the pure devotees, if you hear about Krishna from the spiritual master, you hear about Krishna from the fixed up Vaishnavas, by that hearing process, your vision becomes clarified more and more and more. Right now, our vision is very foggy. It's out of focus. Just like you have glasses, I see. Take them off for a minute. Take off your glasses. It looks kind of blurry, doesn't it? Yes. Put it back on. So right now, actually, we can all see Krishna right now, but we're getting a blurry version. You see, we're all seeing Krishna because actually Krishna is omnipresent. We're all seeing him, but we're getting a blurred out version of Krishna. He's not in focus, you see. We're seeing the material energy instead of the source of that energy. But with the corrective lenses of spectacles, you see, then the one's focus, one's blurry vision becomes clear and sharp in focus vision. So in the same way, this prema anjana has a corrective effect on one's vision. That as you continue to take in this medicine of hearing about Krishna, gradually you will see Krishna everywhere and Krishna in everything. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yo mam pashyati sarvatra sravam shamai pashyati tashaham tataham me chamash. What is it?
Tashaham na pranashyami.
Satchami na pranashyati. From one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Bhagavad Gita 6:30. So the fact is, the more you hear about Krishna, the more you perceive Krishna within everything. And more you will experience Krishna with everything. Just like it's also stated, bhakti parashanu bhava varaktiranyatra shai shatraka eka kalaha prapadya manashya tasandashu shtushti pushti shudapayo nagasam. For one who becomes purified by developing bhakti within his heart, he experiences Krishna everywhere, through all of his senses. Everywhere he experiences Krishna. And the result is he becomes completely detached from all forms of material sense gratification. You see? In other words, if you're experiencing Krishna, the essence of everything, he's within every atom, he's between every atom. Krishna is, there's nowhere Krishna is not present. If you actually experience Krishna, if we can actually come to that stage of experiencing Krishna within everything, then the external glitter of material sense gratification, you see, won't appeal to us. If you actually get the real thing, you see, the false thing is no longer attractive. Just like in the U.S., I don't know, do you ever have a gold rush in Australia?
Yes, we had.
You had one also. We had one in the U.S. back in 1849 in California. The 1849, they were called the 49ers. The people rushing out there, they were called the 49ers, rushing to California for the gold. You see. So they were panning in the rivers for gold, and the people who first got there, they got a lot of gold, they became very rich. Those who came later, they didn't. But there was something called iron pyrite, which looks like gold. They gave it a nickname, fool's gold. People think, oh, I've got it rich. I was panning in the river and I got all this gold. Wow, I'm great. This is great. They go in, oh, this is iron pyrite. This is not gold. You see? So, the present moment, you see, we are attracted by the iron pyrite of material sense gratification. Fool's gold. The glitter, you know, titillating the material senses. The enjoyment of the senses interacting with the objects of the senses. It's called sense gratification. And it's nothing but fool's gold, because actually beneath that glitter, that false glitter of sense gratification, is actually Govinda, the one who gives true pleasure to the senses. You understand? So we're taking, it's like taking the, like somebody gives you an envelope with some money in it. It's like they give the guru's dakshina in an envelope. If the guru would have just take the envelope and leave beside the dakshina, that would be a foolish thing, you see. Oh, it's a very nice envelope. Thank you very much. And he throws the dakshina away, he keeps the envelope, you see. How foolish that would be, the guru did that, you see. So that's what we're doing. You see, the sense gratification is the envelope And Krishna consciousness is the actual money within the envelope, you see. So we're taking the external thing and we're leaving behind the actual essence of happiness, which is Krishna, the association of Krishna. So, therefore, one requires to hear, because hearing from the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, this is the medicine, the remedial measure for curing one from this infatuation or fascination or being captured by the material nature. You understand? The material nature has us captivated right now. We're like dancing dogs in the hands of Maya Devi right now. We're dancing dogs. That's a fact. We're completely captivated by the material nature. So, if we can hear sufficiently from Krishna, from Guru, from Vaishnavas, you see, by this hearing, we'll... The hallucinatory spell which has been cast upon our brains by Durga Devi or Maya Devi, that spell will be removed. And we'll no longer be fascinated by the material energy. We will appreciate it as the inferior energy of Krishna, not as the all-in-all, as we do at the present time. We'll spit on it, or reject it. Well, no, this is also very nice. This material energy can be used in Krishna's service. It's like Sydney, you see. There's nothing wrong. We don't spit on Sydney because we found Krishna. No, Sydney is very nice. We can make the whole city Krishna conscious. Let every building be Krishna conscious, you see. So in this way, Krishna consciousness means to resurrect the original consciousness that we once had before we became foolish and became captivated by Maya's charms. So here's a question. I'll try to answer. If there's any more, you can pass them forward. What is the identity of the spirit soul in the spiritual planet? That you will find out when you get there. Every spirit soul has a particular identity in any one of five rasas or relationships. We don't know at this present time. Nor do we have to know. We simply have to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. That's for you. You ask me, what is my identity in the spiritual world? I'm the servant of Prabhupada. You see, that's all I need to know. All I know is, I don't know what my rasa is in the spiritual world. Except for the fact that I'm the eternal servant of Srila Prabhupada. And by that service to Srila Prabhupada, everything will become revealed in due course. At the right time, at the right moment, you see, then everything will be revealed. I don't need to know, I need to know whether I'm a gopi, a gopa, whether I'm a flute, whether I'm a butterfly. Come on, let me know. Tell me. I have to know what I am. This is sense gratification. Devotional service is unconditional. Not that you have to tell me what my rasa is and then I'll surrender to Krishna. See if I think it's worth going back to Godhead or not. No, this is material calculation. Completely material calculation. All I know is I'm the eternal servant of Srila Prabhupada. I'll serve him wherever he wants me to serve. If he wants me to serve in the material world, birth after birth, for making the world Krishna conscious, I'm ready. He wants me to go back to God and serve as a cowherd boy, a cowherd girl, a cow, a calf, a butterfly, a flute, whatever. I don't care. If he wants me to do both at the same time, it doesn't matter. Actually, one can be in both. You know that one can be in both worlds at the same time? It's described in the Bhagavatam. Pallada and Maharaj is simultaneously in the spiritual world and the material world. One can actually be in both. Do both things at the same time. This is the inconceivable nature of the spirit soul. He can actually do both things simultaneously. Do we still have senses and sense organs? Oh yes, but they're completely pure. They don't wear with age. You don't need a hearing aid in the spiritual world. Yes?
Lord Chaitanya, he said that Naham vipronan vaishyona sudaranaham marnicha nagrahapatir kuntu po prodem kir nikhla parmana bandhur kofir bhartuk padkamana
Yes, yes, yes.
So the spiritual master is eternal servant and we are praying that we are dasa, 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 na dasa.
Yes, yes.
So why do we need to know any other rasa?
We don't. That's my point. We don't need to know. All I know is I'm the eternal servant of Guru and Krishna. That's all we need to know. Sufficient. We always keep referring to this material world as a nasty place filled with miseries. Shouldn't it be a little positive and appreciate the current situation that's happening in this world? Oh yeah, it's really great. I mean, they kill all these, murder all these cows every day. And I mean, in the U.S. they murder 1.4 million children. It's so wonderful. I mean, it's great. They kill 1.4 million kids every year. I mean, it's so wonderful. America is such a wonderful place. And I mean, all right, if you want to think that way, go ahead. But, you know, it's time to grow up, folks. No. Let's face the reality. Of course, in one hand, yes, Prabhupada actually said that. He said he saw the big building in New York in those days. Actually, it's become again a big building now. The World Trade Center was brought down by Al-Qaeda. Where he said the Empire State Building, zero. The pure devotee sees Solomon, he sees the material with Sydney Opera House, zero. You see, the Harbor Bridge, zero. He sees, everybody says, but when you add Krishna, then it'd be called a very valuable number, you see.
Prabhupada also said about this, like the material world is all miserable condition, and we want to appreciate it. That means we, animal who is about to die closes his eyes and says, everything is all right. Yes, I'm not going to die. It's okay.
No, it's actually very good. It's a good point. It's actually very good to see that this is a miserable place. I mean, first of all, to think that devotees are not positive is very, very wrong understanding. Shouldn't we be a little positive? Devotees are absolutely positive. We're not just a little positive. A devotee is unlimitedly positive. This idea that Hare Krishna people have this negative attitude, you know, they're not very good, they're very pessimistic, they have this negative attitude. This is not the proper understanding. We have the most positive outlook of anybody in all the three worlds because we see Krishna behind this material nature. They don't. Their positive is a false positive. It's like somebody's sick in bed, they're dying of cancer, they got tubes all over their body. How are you doing? Fine. This is illusory happiness. You see? It's like fool's gold. Well, how you doing? Well, I got this whole big thing of gold. I'm a rich man. But, you know, they're deluded. They're not, their sense of happiness is false. It's deluded. It doesn't bring real satisfaction. It's like you go to the doctor, you know, and he says, well, my dear patient, I have to inform you, you have terminal cancer. You have 3 months. Oh, doctor, come on, give me some positive. Give me something positive. I don't want to hear that. I'm going to go to a different doctor. This doctor's no good. He told me I have terminal cancer. He's a no good doctor. I'm going to go to the one next door. He says, oh, you're fine here. And just pay your fee. You're fine. You're healthy. No, you want the doctor that tells the truth. Which doctor is more positive? The one who falsely tells you you're healthy or the one who honestly tells you you have terminal cancer and there's a chance if you take the treatment right now that you can be saved? Which doctor is more positive? The one who gives you a false report or the one who tells you the truth and gives you the solution? You understand? So this idea that devotees are not positive is a big, big misunderstanding. We are the most positive people on this planet. No one is as positive as a fixed-up devotee of Krishna. Because this is real positive. It's not this false positive. You know. Eat, drink, and be merry. You know. Devotee's positive. He is, devotee is the most optimistic person in the whole world. Actually. How to understand that Srila Narada Muni chants Narayan and not Krishna? Where's the proof that he doesn't chant Krishna? That's my question. Where's the proof he doesn't chant Krishna's name? Evidences from shastras of people in other yugas worshipping Krishna. There's so many evidences. Brahmaji is the first evidence. The first verse of the Bhagavatam. What more evidence do you need? You see? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What is that verse? Yes. Janmadyasya Jataha. And then he says, Atarsheshu Abhyagyaswaram. Tene Brahma Hridayadi Kaviye Muyanti Yatsurayaha. You see? It's stated right there that Lord Brahma is worshipping Krishna within the heart. Or Brahma Samhita. Wow, now there you really got the evidence. Ishvaraha Paramaha Krishnaha Satchirananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. And Brahmaji clearly delineates the position of the demigods. They are devotees of Krishna, just like Durga, for example. Shrishti stati palaya sadhana shaktareka shayeva yasya bhuvanani vivarti durga ichchanna rupam aviyasya tate state sa govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. The external potency, maya, which is of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in accordance with whose order Durga conducts herself. Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text number 43.
Yeah, Lord Shiva also says
To Parvati that. Yes, Lord Shiva. Actually, it's very clearly stated by Lord Brahma, all the demigods, they're actually worshipping in accordance Krishna is the supreme authority, very clearly stated, verse after verse after verse. Goloka namni nijadamni tale chatashya devi mahesha haridam shuteshu teshu. Te te prabhava nichaya vihitascha yena govinda madi purusham tamaham bhajami. Lowest of all is located Devidam, the mundane world. Next above it is Maheshdam, the abode of Mahesh. Above Maheshdam is placed Haridam, the abode of Hari, and above them all is located Krishna's own realm named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance. Who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. So it's very clearly stated, verse after verse after verse, how behind everything there is Krishna. Does Lord Vishnu reside on Dhruvaloka along with Dhruva Maharaj? Do you know the answer? Then Vishnu is there on Dhruvaloka?
Yes. Huh? Yes.
Hmm. What are Dhruva Maharaj's activities on that planet? Do you know them?
He's the king.
Okay. If a child was not conceived in Krishna consciousness, but the parents brought up the child in Krishna consciousness, in the child's childhood, is there still some hope? Yes. My parents didn't conceive me in Krishna consciousness. They didn't even bring me up in Krishna consciousness. But by the mercy of Prabhupada, there is hope. For me, there's some hope at least for me. The positive aspect of a devotee, is this applicable to any devotee, senior, junior, or beginner? Like yesterday, you clarified in the seminar that it's the purity of chanting is what matters and not the count. Well, actually, because our chanting is not pure, completely pure, the counting also counts. If you were completely pure, you could say Hare Krishna one time and that would be it. You'd be a liberated soul, pure devotee. See, because we're not our chanting is not completely pure, there we require a lot of chanting to gradually purify us. So the counting is important for impure chanters like us. The counting is absolutely essential, therefore at least 16 rounds must be chanted. Why?
Can I ask a question in that regard?
Sure.
Whether counting or not counting the number of mantras, but is it more important to follow the instruction of the spiritual master or the counting or that?
The spiritual master instructs you to chant at least 16 rounds every day.
So, I understand. It's regarding that question I'm asking. That's all. That question says that the number counts or something. So more, what is more important? Count of the number of the mantras?
The principle of obeying the spiritual master's order is the most important thing. What does Brahma Samhita mean when it says the material energy is a shadow of the chit potency? Maya, the external potency, Maya, is a shadow of the chit. It means exactly that. It's a shadow of the chit potency. And just as stated. Doesn't mean anything else. It's not symbolically meaning anything else. Just as stated, the external potency Maya, which is a shadow of the chit potency. Krishna has his sat potency, his chit potency, and his ananda potency. Chit means full of knowledge. So the shadow of the chit potency would be ignorance, isn't it? The shadow of knowledge, the knowledge potency, is achit. You see, chit and achit. Chit means knowledge, and achit means ignorance. So, the spiritual potency is knowledge, and the material potency is ignorance. That's what it means to be a shadow of the chit potency. Achit. Ignorance. Any other question? Everyone satisfied now? All questions are answered. Everyone is ready to fully absorb themselves in Krishna Bhakti at every minute and no longer dance to the tune of Maya's drum, to the beat of Maya's drum. Everyone's ready now to give up all nonsense. No questions. Okay. How do we need? Do we need material prospects or prospects to progress in spiritual life? Can we get rid of the craving for the material? Actually, we use material things in Krishna's service, just like we need money. To buy bhoga for the deities, for example. We need money to build a new temple. We need money to print books. We use automobiles and airplanes to go to the temple or to go for preaching activities. So is it wrong to use these material things? No, not wrong. Anasakta shavishayan yatartma bayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyamuchate prapanchakitaya budhya hari sambandhi vastanaha mumukshuvi puritjago vairagyam phalgu katyate. This is described very nicely by Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, that one who sees everything in relation to Krishna and uses everything in his service is properly situated in renunciation. On the other hand, a person who does not see everything in relationship with Krishna and just artificially gives up have anything to do with anything in this material world is a false renunciate. He's called Paugu Vairagi. In India, there's a river called Paugu. Any of you ever seen that river, the Paugu River? If you go there, you won't see the river. You just see a sandy river bank, but the river is underground river, you see. So Paugu Vairagi means you make a show on the surface of being renounced, but inside your heart there's all material desires, you see. And someone says, oh, I have nothing to do with this material world, you see. I renounce this world. But yet they're doing so much cheating business, you see. Within their heart or behind closed doors, we also see sometimes these charlatan gurus. We had one charlatan guru in Texas. He had a big, big project, very big, like 200 acres. They called it New Barshana. Big, big project. But then he was arrested for some improper dealings with some of the daughters of his disciples. And he fled the country. He snuck across the border into Mexico into hiding. The Swami. He was like an 80-year-old man. He was given like a 20-year sentence, you know, but in the court. So he skipped the country rather than spend the rest of his life in jail. This was the Swami, the big Swamiji that everyone thought was such a great renunciate, you see. So these people who don't understand what is Krishna consciousness, who don't really know how to use everything for Krishna, they may make a show of being big, big renunciates, but in their heart they still have this dirt, and sometimes they do very inappropriate things, and they're caught also, and they're exposed for their nonsense. So one who is actually fixed in Krishna consciousness, his happiness is to engage everything in Krishna's service. Isn't everything Krishna's property? Doesn't Krishna say that? Sarvaloka Maheshwaram? So the devotee's happiness, just like I read this morning, Prabhupada said in his Vrindavan Bhajan, a poem he wrote in 1958, he said that one who is strong in his faith, and he was well versed in the scriptures, he is an uttama adhikari, and he can deliver the whole world. You see, such great transcendentalists, they don't want to just go away from the world and go into some secluded place. They want to remain very active in the world, and they want to make the whole world Krishna conscious. This is the mission of the uttama adhikari devotees. Those who are strong in faith and well versed in the scriptures, they want to make the whole world Krishna conscious. They don't want to walk away from it. They want to see that everybody is Krishna conscious. They want to revolutionize this planet. They want to turn the history books upside down. You see? They're very interested in the material world, how to make it Krishna conscious. The media, every media is of interest to them. Radio, TV, internet, colleges, magazine, every single, they're interested in every single media outlet, publishing books especially. We know is the best, most powerful means, publishing and distributing books. Some might say this is material activity. Prabhupada mentioned this in his Bhagavatam introduction to those original brown volumes, that they may criticize me. Here I am going from Vrindavan into Delhi to deal with printing companies. This is not the business of a sannyasi, to go and deal with material businessmen. You know, they may criticize, you see. So people just don't understand that anything if we can engage something material in Krishna's service, it's a mistake to give that up. So Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24, Bali Maharaj quoted Mother Earth, "I can bear anything except a person who is a liar," said Mother Earth. Is lying okay? And becoming more Krishna conscious, especially when the family is averse to Krishna consciousness? This lying is the lying of a materialist. Now, a devotee generally doesn't lie, but sometimes if it's necessary, he will tell a lie. Just like, for example, one time we were distributing some prasadam to, I was previously I'm doing a little business to support our preaching center, a travel business. So I had some business partners. There was one gentleman named Mr. Willie Abrams. He was a Kerala Christian, and he owned a travel business called Sky Pass Travel, and so he was my partner, and we did some business together. And so one day I walked into his office with some prasadam cookies at Christmas time, and I said, Willie, here's some cookies for you. He said, is it prasadam? You know, an Indian Christian knows what is prasadam. It's taboo, you know, the contaminated been offered to Krishna. It's sinful. So I said, oh, no, it's not prasadam. I said, oh, okay. So was that sinful what I did? I lied to Willie. I told him it wasn't prasadam. I was sinful, right? I'll get some bad karma from it. No. I used some tactics, how to give him prasadam. So sometimes lying may be necessary, but the best thing is, as far as possible, is always to tell the truth. Because if you lie unnecessarily, especially for sense gratification, then you get yourself in hot water. You tell one lie, and then to protect that lie, you got to tell another one. Protect that one, you got to tell another one. And you got this huge stack of lies. You even forgot which lie was which. Sometimes you forget your stack of lies, and you get exposed. So it's better to be honest as far as possible. You know, but sometimes lying is helpful in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes it does help. Prabhupada actually, I asked Prabhupada about it actually. He wrote me a letter and he told me about his godbrothers. One time they were collecting donations on behalf of the Gaudiya Mahal, and they would tell a lie to people. They would say, our Guru Maharaj, he lived for 12 years in the forest, eating only tulsi leaves for 12 years. And they said, oh, and they gave a donation. And Prabhupada said, the Guru Maharaj could scarcely stop laughing when he heard this. So actually he was pleased. Even they had told a lie, but he was very pleased they got a nice donation. Even though it wasn't true. So sometimes we can lie, but we have to be careful. Prabhupada also warned us, he said, you have to be able to catch the big fish without getting wet.
Mm-hmm. Was it that he was happy that they got donation, or they were...
He thought the lie was really funny, obviously. He was pleased by the donation, but he found it very humorous.
Happy about that they were engaged in service of Krishna.
Yeah, and the Vaishnavas have a sense of humor. He was laughing at what they had told him also. He was also laughing. Yes?
I heard a story by a guru in a lecture, audio lecture. He said that a sannyasi was meditating in the forest and somebody was running along, and he says, can you point me to a safe location where I can hide from these two people that are chasing me to kill me? And he said, yes, just go this way in the forest. So he went that way. And then later on, these two criminals came by, and they asked him, have you seen this person? And then Sannyasi had to decide whether to lie or tell the truth, but he had sworn an oath to not ever tell a lie. But in the end, he told the truth, and then the two guys went and they found him and they killed him. But in the end, this sannyasi got in trouble by Krishna for telling this truth. So how does that compare to telling a lie?
Yeah, one could say, well, in such a situation, one could tell a lie. You know? Oh yeah, I think he went that way.
That happened when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple.
Very good point. There was one time when Bhaktisiddhanta was being attacked. They were trying to kill him. He was attacked by some gunas. They actually wanted to kill him. So one of his disciples, who looked something similar to him, who was a householder, he changed clothes with him. And that disciple, I think, was a fast runner. But he changed clothes with Guru Maharaj, and so Guru Maharaj was able to get away and under disguise of looking like a householder. So one has to be practical also, you know. Okay, another Bali Maharaj question, okay. I must be reading that lately. Bali Maharaj disobeyed his spiritual master even though he came to know Vamanadeva as none other than Lord Vishnu. He knew his intentions. He went ahead to donate 3 pieces of land for Bali Maharaj's actions to his guru justified. Of course, Bali Maharaj actually disobeyed his spiritual master when his spiritual master was telling him not to surrender to Krishna. So you may say, well, that wasn't right. You should never disobey your spiritual master. But what was the result he got by disobeying his spiritual master? He became one of the 12 great Mahajanas, one of the 12 great authorities. You see, wow, if you can disobey your guru and become one of the 12 great authorities of Vaishnavism, it must be okay under that situation.
Bali Maharaj is a little confused also. Because his Guru Maharaj was saying, always give the charity to the Brahmanas.
Yeah.
And that point when Vamanadeva came, he said, don't give him, he's Lord Vishnu.
Yeah.
So he was well known about giving the charity.
Yeah.
So he could not say that, okay, I'm not going to give these. Why Guru is giving that different instruction?
Yeah. So one has to be sincere to follow the orders given. Actually, there's the three-way check and balance system in Vaishnava culture. Just like in the U.S., they're very proud of their three-way check and balance system. Executive branch, judicial branch, and legislative branch. But actually, we do have a three-way check and balance system in Vaishnava culture. We have guru, sadhu, and shastra. The guru is the authenticity of the guru is confirmed by the scriptures and by the saintly teachers. The authenticity of the saintly teachers is confirmed by the shastra and by the guru. And what is bona fide scripture is confirmed by the guru and the saintly teachers. So all three of those will match up together. If one of them deviates, if guru deviates from sadhus and shastra, then he's actually not a bona fide spiritual master. So that three-way check and balance system is there in Vaishnava culture to protect us from being exploited. Anything else?
Yeah. In ISKCON also, the check is there that when before the disciple accepts the spiritual master, there is a question asking that when to reject the guru when he does not.
Yeah, even that for a shelter exam, they're asked when would you reject your guru? There is such a situation. If the guru deviates, which he shouldn't do, but sometimes it happens. He turned out not really be a guru. Someone who deviates is not really a guru, but sometimes it happens. Somebody wasn't really qualified for that position, and somehow they prematurely took up that service when they weren't really qualified to do it. And in such a situation, the disciple is not obliged. If the guru goes to hell, the disciple doesn't have to go to hell with him. It happened. One big guru in Europe, I mean, he had so many disciples, he had so many countries he'd opened up, but then he completely fell down. He became chairman of the GBC. I mean, he was big, huge leader in the movement. Everybody looked up to him, and the next day, you know, he was gone. So it's not that if the guru deviates, it means he was never really qualified to be a guru in the first place. Somehow or other, he prematurely took up that service. So one has to be careful in choosing a spiritual master. That's another moral of the story here. One really has to see that person who is completely sold out to his spiritual master in all circumstances, who never under any condition deviate from his spiritual master's orders. Okay, it looks like your questions are up, so we can stop here. We thank you all very much for hearing very nicely, and the children also heard very nicely. I thank you, Sukirtan, for hearing very nicely. And we'll go on to the next program now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Rajavijashimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
It's great Srimad Sankarshan Das Adhikari Maharaj ki
jai.